Shalom, everybody, and welcome to the Yishai Fleishel Show, broadcasting live from Jerusalem to the world. You're part of it wherever you are. Shalom, and welcome to all of you. We haven't been together in a little bit with our beloved Rabbi Mike Foyer. Rabbi Mike, shalom and welcome.
Oh, shalom, Yishai. It's good to see you.
And it's good to be here at the Pardes Institute in Jerusalem in Talpiot, across from the fabulous Hadar Mall. I just parked in the Hadar Mall.
Always a pleasure.
Right. I don't usually park there. And then my wife is like, you should park at the Hadar Mall. It's cheap. It's a great parking. And what a mall. And what a mall it is. What a mall it
the
really is.
The New Jersey element in you just came out when you said that.
You know, you say that. Yet I think it is wholly Judean, since the mall itself is filled with great Israeli products as well, like Ne'ot Teva, Ne'ot shoes.
For sure.
And they just opened up a multi-restaurant food court, which
it's
is
nice.
Mostly Mahadran.
Yes.
Okay, Mahadran food. We're talking about great meat places, great salad places, great soup places, even a nachos place, which is not going to last for too much longer. So I'm going to try to.
Mexican food never does.
Right, it never does, exactly. And it's also a milchik Mexican food. It's never going to work. But so therefore, I think I'm going to go try to get some nachos today just to kind of enjoy that.
I might join you in that.
God bless those guys. So it's a great mall. How do I know? Because really the last day of Hanukkah, Zot Hanukkah, had a fabulous, fabulous day on Zot Hanukkah. Really, I have to tell you, I have a philosophy about Hanukkah, which is try not to work on Hanukkah, right?
We should talk about that.
Many of my friends just work regular.
I work like, straight through.
No, I just like, I tell the kids are off of school, and I tell my work, this is my vacation time, me out, okay? And I was out. We went to the desert. We were at Shifta, this Byzantine city. It was great. We saw a show in Tel Aviv with Dudu Fisher and other, lights of the kind of religious / musical world. Adiran, the famous Israeli guitarist and musician. Anyway, that was awesome. But then Zot Hanukkah, went to the city of David with my good friends, friends from Neve Daniel, went to the city of David, toured there, saw the Greek...
The Acra,
this Greek like bastion fortress
yeah.
that they were rooted out by, finally by Simon, by Shimon the Maccabee, the Chashmonai, and that was really fun, and then lit, saw candlelighting at the Western Wall. Then we have a tradition that I promise you is going to catch in one year. We light Hanukkah candles at the Western Wall. I bring with me candles and overlooking the Temple Mount, we light candles. We do it there, and we do it with the kids, and we hang around there, spindriddles, do it right there next to the temple, and then went up to Mamilla, okay, and then saw the candle lighting there, which had the most beautiful Chanukiah I've ever seen, Chabad. Beautiful Chabad of Mamilla, whatever, yeah, they're awesome, right? And then the Solomon Brothers were playing.
Ooh.
And they're so great, the Solomon Brothers, such a great Karl Bach kind of music and rock, you know, a sound. And then from there, went to these restaurants, and every one of my, right here at Hadar Mall, every one of my kids went to a different restaurant and got what they wanted, and everybody got to eat last night at Hanukkah.
Food court heaven,
and it was beautiful. And you know what? It would have been a perfect holiday for us, the Fleischers, and other people also told me that Am Yisrael took it a step up this year in terms of Hanukkah. There was just a great energy in the air until the bubble burst with the attack. That happened at the Ofra Junction, which I know very well. I used to live right across from there, basically, in Beit El. And the Ofra Junction, basically, a car drove by and just started...
Drive-by shooting,
yeah, like gang-style drive-by shooting. And just, automatic weapon just shot at a crowd of people waiting for rides or for buses. And who was injured... There were nine injuries altogether, but who was most critically injured was a girl, a woman who I know, who I remember very well. Her name is Shiraya El, and her prayer name is Shiraya El Bat Liora Sara, and she is Chaim and Liora Silverstein's daughter, and I used to eat by their house. I know her very. I remember her very well. We didn't eat many times there, but I certainly remember eating there, and I remember that she and the other kids made a big impression on me. And I always remembered that they managed, even though they were like born in Israel, managed to accept the South African accent. I remember that she yelled at one of her brothers, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" Anyway, she was shot and she was 30 weeks pregnant, emergency C-section, and the baby is right now, the baby Tinok Ben, Shira Yael is struggling for his life at this time as well. And the perpetrators have not yet been caught as of this recording, to my knowledge. And it was done on the last night of Hanukkah, Zot Hanukkah, like a pinprick. Okay, so such beautiful lights, the eight lights of Hanukkah with the ninth Shamash, and this beautiful feeling of wholeness, of Am Yisrael, of together, as though we're all one big sufganya with a jelly in the middle. And yet the haters, the terrorists, you know, just knew when to like put the pin in the balloon and pop it. I've noticed this at the Knesset also. Whenever there's a rallying moment of nationalism and Jewish feelings or whatever, the hater Knesset members will rise up exactly that moment and say something outlandish and dark and get people upset. And they have a great sense of where
the fracture point is,
right? And how to exploit it.
Yep.
So that was Hanukkah. The other thing is, I recorded my show last week inside a ruin in Shifta, and I was thinking that you and I didn't get a chance to talk about last week's Torah portion, which was so full of interesting things. But I want to talk about just one thing, and then let it bring us into our Torah portion this week. And
what's that?
Well, this week is Vayigash. It's when Yehuda approaches Joseph.
The big showdown.
The big showdown of these two mighty forces. Clash of the Titans.
Clash of the models of kingship.
Should we say clash of the biblical Titans? Is that good?
I don't know. Titans is a pretty Goyishe term.
Is it? Yeah, biblical Titans?
Biblical Titans, it's like mixing Greek mythology okay. and Torah. I'm not so sure.
I like that stuff. Okay, but in any case, one thing that we didn't get a chance to talk about is how Joseph kind of... We talked about how he got down to Egypt, but how did he get from the abject slavery to Mibira Amikta Leigra Rama? How did he come from a very lowly place to a very high place within seemingly minutes when the time and first thing, just that posturing of the ability to come from a low place and then just shoot up. For example, one of the problems is, it's well known and documented in America, people who win lotteries oftentimes lose all their money within about 6 months.
Yes. And that's because their internal sense of their self, what we call their blueprint, is that of a poor person or a spendthrift. You know, so you can dump all the money you want, or it's like dumping water down a pipeline that's got a bunch of holes in it. It will just run out.
Right. Or I would liken it with a kind of a similar but different type of metaphor, which is a sponge that's very, very, very dry. And you pour water on it, it's not able to...
It doesn't absorb.
Absorb, right? As opposed to Yosef, he's in prison, and when the time comes, and they're like, it's time for you to be number two, he's like, what's up? I'm ready.
Shave, shower, I'm here. Yeah, I love it. It's exactly what happens, actually.
You need, hey, what's going on? You need me? I'm here for you. You know, I'm ready for this.
And this becomes a model, by the way, for much of Jewish history. I mean, you realize that with all the oppression and the exclusion that Am Yisrael has experienced in more or less every nation that we've found residence, nevertheless, many, if not most of them, have given a moment for the Jews to rise. And we have done so. Right? If you look what happened in Spain, you look what happened in Poland, you look what happened in America for sure today. And that's because our internal narrative is one of success. Despite what the external circumstance may look like, you know, right. That our inner narrative is one of success. So therefore, right. Once there's some petach, some opening for us to step out, we step out as a successful person. It's one of the great challenges, I tell you. I mean, it's a little bit edgy, but growing up in public school in America, mm-hmm. and watching a lot of young black men struggle to be successful and seeing how the narrative of their community was to draw them back and downwards as opposed to sort of propel them up and forward. You know, like they would get called white if they were too successful in school, and, you know, they were betraying their community, and it was a tragic thing to witness. Mm-hmm. Whereas... You know, I don't know how you grew up, but I bet it's similar to me, which was the definition of what it is to be Jewish is to succeed.
Sure,
that's it.
Yeah. It's a channeling of life. What does it even mean, succeed? It's to love knowledge, to move ahead, to love to live, to love success, yeah, in the sense that
Sif Chaim, like you right. said, to add life.
The other thing that I wanted to talk about from last week's Torah portion is Pharaoh's dreams. And the reason I want to talk about that is because I have a specific take on Pharaoh's dreams, which is different than the obvious meaning of it, which is that Pharaoh's dreams, let's just remember quickly, the dream of the
seven cows
coming out of the Nile and the seven stalks
of wheat.
Well, it's important to understand that his part of the dream is right one stalk with seven
different heads of
right.
Of
why is that
rain.
Important? It's very important for me actually for what I'm about to say, which is. I think that what Pharaoh was actually dreaming is that he was dreaming, I sense a foreign presence. I sense that the Jewish people are trying to come into Egypt, and I will swallow them. I will swallow them, and there will be no memory of Israel left. Egypt is the dominant culture paradigm, and Israel thinks it's something, but it will come into us, and we will swallow it in toto. Okay.
Interesting.
And there's two proofs for that. One is it's not a proof. It's a simuch. You know, it's
a hint.
A hint, right? Which is that Joseph himself is compared to an ox, and the dream is about cows. And the other dream that he had is about
the stalk
sheaves,
of wheat,
right? And here's the sheaves again. But interestingly enough, and here I saw the Baal HaTurim, our best friend here, and he says there's only one other place where it says bekaneh echad. In
on one stalk,
right? Seven candelabras on one stalk. That is the menorah. That's the only other place in Torah. So I'm going to swallow you, menorah. I'm going to swallow you down here in Egypt. I'm going to swallow you down here in Egypt. And what does Pharaoh do? He gives him new clothes, new name, and a new wife.
That's right. He makes him an Egyptian.
Right. He makes him to Egyptian. He makes him walk like an Egyptian.
I think that might be the title. I just got transported back to the early 90s right there.
and little did he know that the Medrash tells us that Joseph's wife was actually none other than the daughter of Dinah, who was a product of the rape of Dinah in Shechem.
That's right.
And so basically he actually ended up marrying a Jewess.
Well, remembering that our sages have this theory called the conservation of personality. They don't like bit characters. Everybody has to be somebody to tie the whole picture together.
Right.
It's a fascinating tool, by the way, in understanding the entire Torah as one unit as opposed to just a linear narrative flow.
Here, look at this. I found it right here. Bemikre, it's open here. It says Bekaneh Chad. It says Gimel. Gimel B'masorat. It's three times. I'm glad I found it because I made a mistake. This phrase appears three times in the Tanakh. Twice in this narrative, here and below, and once with regard to the menorah.
Right. Two cases. Right. Finally, repeat itself here.
Right. This indicates the prosperity is a light for the world. Therefore, Pharaoh saw the good ears of grain on one stalk, but he did not see the scorched ears on one stalk. That's what says the Baal HaTurim. But I say, you see, he wanted to swallow up Israel. And I throw this back to you, which is like, there's this effort to swallow Israel a lot of times. When I spoke about it in Shul, I said, and here, by the way, Joseph himself, today buried in Shechem, is once again swallowed up by the Egypt of today.
No question. And I have this fear for our country now. You know, I just put out this podcast on the Maccabees in the modern state. And how we can avoid the disasters that really destroyed their kingdom. And one of them is I don't want to live in a country where Black Friday is more important than Friday night. Right? And right now, the danger of sort of Western American commercial culture swallowing us, like we're very good. We've got a lot of history behind our ability to succeed at commerce and listen, Hollywood and the ability to generate narratives and Madison Avenue and the ability to advertise. Like, we do it very well, but that's not essentially who we are. It's not our mission. And so for the danger we're always facing, like you're saying, is that Joseph posture, which we need to speak about in this parsha, that Joseph posture is the adaptive posture of the Jew. How do we succeed at the world's game? Whereas Yudah represents that question, well, how do we succeed at God's plan for us? And the two can clash in a very big way.
Okay, so let's get to the clash.
Okay,
let's get to the clash because we have a clash today, a clash of the biblical titans, okay? And these, after they walk like an Egyptian, there's a clash of the biblical titans. And that is that we remember at the end of last week's Torah portion, basically there's a false accusation against a trumped up charge against
careful.
Binyamin, and he is caught with this magical chalice of Joseph's, of Tzafnat Paneach, this Egyptian
prince,
viceroy,
or
whatever you want to call him,
vizier,
and he's going to get and he's getting hauled back. And the edict comes down saying, okay, I'm taking Benjamin as a slave to me forever. You guys can go back up to your father. And then Judah steps up in this week's Torah portion. Now, I heard a long explanation. I don't know if I could get through the whole of it, but basically, one of the explanations by a famous rabbi here in Israel named Rabbi Yoel Ben Nun is that he posits that Joseph thought maybe that his father Jacob was in on the sale.
Yes, this is a big question.
Right, and that the idea is,
why did he never reach out and try to find them?
Why didn't he find him? And why did he send him from Hebron to Shechem to, you know, this long distance to see his brothers? And
knowing that his brothers did not love
him. Right, and also there's a family history there of one brother kind of being cast out.
Right.
If it's Ishmael or if it's Esav. Okay, so Yosef thought I was a cast out. And later on, what he finds out through this whole process is that and he'll find out this out we're about to read, is that Judah's going to tell him that dad thought that you're dead.
You were rended by a wolf.
That you're rended, you were swallowed up by an animal. Moreover, he's going to see that Benjamin is being treated with great care. And he's going to try to separate Benjamin out. He wants to find out the facts. It's his brother that he feels close to. And he's going to try to get him to be with himself alone through this plot. But then suddenly and surprisingly, the very same Yehuda, who was the head of the sellers, right, is now, I remember what you said, that he may have not sold, although I have some questions on that. But in any case, he sees that this guy who sold him out is now defending his brother at the cost of his own freedom. So he suddenly starts to understand that things are not what he thought, and that's what this Torah portion is about. And Yehuda, this now showing leadership, where we've learned about Yehuda that he went towards, you know, different life, and he went down, and he went towards prostitution, all kinds of stuff like that. Suddenly,
he had his low point, just like Yosef did.
Right.
It was a Yerida in both cases, and there's this descent and the turning point. I mean, this idea that a person can't really become who they need to be before they hit rock bottom on the wrong path is not a modern concept. We see it in both Yehuda and Yosef, and this is both of them now unconsciously reaching their height face to face.
Right. And basically Yehuda is going to make a very impassioned plea, not for the sake of justice, but for the sake of the father.
Yes.
This father. Yes. In the name of the father.
A wise choice, by the way, because he knows that in international affairs, justice is an irrelevancy.
Right. Right, and it's also, who are you to talk about justice? You're now being accused of theft, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He's not going for that. He's
furthermore, I am the law, says Pharaoh.
That's right. And so says Yehuda. Okay, you know, if you take him, it's going to kill our father.
Right.
It's going to kill our father. And at this point, Yosef maybe being emotional about his connection to his father, maybe hearing for the first time that father thought, Jacob thought that he was killed. Ach, tarof, taraf. It's interesting. It's a very interesting phrase there, because it says, ve'omar, it's in Jacob's mouth. And Jacob said he must have been swallowed up, but I haven't seen him till now. And I think that there's a
little bit of hint there.
There's a hint there. I haven't seen him till now. I'm looking you in the eye. I kind of see.
You're looking awfully familiar.
You know, yeah.
South not Panea.
I'm having a better time with these Torah portions.
Yeah, I see this
year.
You're much happier.
Yeah, I kind of went into them and it made me.
I mean, I felt so rich.
I felt better about it this year. I felt better about it this year. Any case,
I mean, certainly the messianic subtext of this week's parsha must speak to you.
Yes,
right. In this sense that there are two sides to Am Yisrael that have to be reconciled before redemption can come, which is the side that Yosef represents, which is the tremendous ability to not only succeed at the game of the nations, but to help the nations actually come to their own internal order, in order that the groundwork is laid for the model that Yehuda represents, which is really Am Levadad Yishkon, which is Am Yisrael needs to be alone, at least in its essence, if not in its social relationships. Right. But that can't work until the world is ordered. We're not meant to just retreat and let the world, you know, fend for itself. And it's a deep tension. I see this tension in us today. Like, you know, we want to be world leaders, but we want to be world leaders at their game.
Right.
We want to be the startup nation and all these things. So we don't know how to be world leaders at our game, which is the moral clarity and the sort of divine message, and really just holding that connection between heaven and earth, which is so critical for the human existence.
I think that the whole technology, like Israel's a leader in technology, tropes
things.
and memes.
Uh-huh.
I actually think it comes from a secular version of being a light unto the nations.
Mm-hmm.
They get excited about it because they feel like their ability to contribute and to succeed in this world is a kind of Israeli, if I could use it in that sense, you know, kind of gift to the world. And they feel good about it. And this is their way of saying something that they don't feel comfortable saying, which is Israel's got this moral clarity role in being a light of the nations.
But this is the essence of what I mean of Mashiach ben Yosef, of that the messianic element of Yosef. That's what I mean. The hands belong to Esav, right? The ability to build the world, despite all of our successes, right, belongs to the nations. Why? Because we're, cool. What are we, 12, 14 million people, if you weigh us soaking wet? You know, like, we're not going to be the ones to reshape the face of the planet in a practical sense. Mm-hmm. But there is this ability that we have, astoundingly, to succeed on that front, let's say disproportionate to our numbers. And so I very deeply agree with you, and my sense is that one of the reasons that Israel became the name of our country, right, be it consciously or unconsciously, is because there was a sense amongst the early Zionists that Yudah was too particularist.
Right.
It was too separate and alone. And that's not what they wanted.
Right.
It's not at all what they wanted. And so I don't disparage at all this idea that we're bringing light to the world through our technology. I think we are, absolutely. But I don't think we should mistake what is essentially a symptom for the cause.
Right. Sometimes it's hard to talk about the deep stuff. You know, it's, people get stuck. And sometimes I actually find that my Gentile friends will well, no, just say what, you know, just kind of
listen,
like,
they don't have the same baggage.
Right, they don't have the same baggage. And they don't have other kind of breathing down their throat, their neck,
plus, it doesn't make any real demands on them. I mean, if I start talking about Am Yisrael as the moral compass for the world, that means every single Jew needs to be on board or they're affecting the mission.
Okay, let's now get to the next thing.
Okay.
Our time is running short, and I want to say that you and I had a disagreement that we mentioned 3 weeks ago, I think, or four weeks ago, and I said to you, you know, I still find Joseph to be a frustrating, I don't want to say this because we're talking about one of the great ones, and I always remind people, like, in terms of my personal charity giving, one of the things that I give money to specifically is the Tomb of Joseph. It's like I believe in it, I'm not there, and I'm like, it's very important to me. So I'm very cautious in what I'm saying because
good Yira.
Yeah, exactly. I got a lot of year about this, but at the same time, textually speaking, I find some of the responses that Joseph says to be grating. I find them to be grating. They grated me every year. Like, I looked at it again this year, and I'm like, oh, don't say it that way. Don't say it that way.
I know what you're going to say.
Okay, there's a few things. So anyway, he gets accosted by Yehuda, not the word accosted. What is it?
Confronted.
Confronted, but also beseeched, whatever it is. And he breaks down, and he will now reveal himself to the brothers, and he basically sends out all the Egyptians out of the room, and he cries loud, yet still Egypt hears, and he says, Yosef says to his brothers, I am Joseph. Is my father still alive? Okay, so even that right there is that there's like a little bit of like, it's my father. Is he alive? Like, okay, I've heard an explanation that this means that the father, that he thought maybe that they're just kind of rusing him. Is it really that Jacob's still alive? Is my father still alive? Anyway, they couldn't answer him because they got scared. And he calls them over.
Big shock.
And he says, I'm your brother, which you sold. And here's the question, by the way, on your take, which is he thinks that they sold him in any case. And now, okay, there's a way to explain that away.
Yeah, pretty easy one.
The
last thing he heard was,
right,
let's sell him. Next thing you know, these guys will pull him out of the pit and send him down to Egypt. I mean,
right. But they don't say no.
I did, by the way, watch King of Dreams with my son over
at Hanukkah. It was good, right?
On your record, it was great.
Yeah, it was good. Okay. They did a good job. The dream sequences and stuff,
that was excellent.
They really did well, yeah. They did it well. And it was cool that they tackled the Joseph story. That was cool that they,
not a simple story.
Right, it's not a simple story, right? And he says, but then he says, okay, and now don't be sad and shouldn't be bad in your eyes because you sold me down here because actually God did it to help you survive. And here's what he says. Kizeh shnatayim harav bekerav haaretz v'od chamesh shanim asher ein charish v'katzir. It's 2 years the famine has started, and it's going to be 5 more years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how do you know that, Joseph? Well, I know, because I'm Joseph. So I'm telling you right now. It's 2 years, and it's going to be 5 more years that the famine. And he's going to say that again. And God has put me before you to make for you a momentous deliverance. And it's not you who sent me yet again, but God. And he's put me as an important person to Pharaoh and to a master of his entire household.
Right, did you see my car out there?
Right.
It's huge.
Okay. And now go up to my father, not to our father, but to my father, and say to him, your son Joseph, says your son Joseph, God has put me to a master of all of Egypt. Come down. Don't wait around. And you'll be close to me, and I'll feed you. Because guess what? For 5 more years is going to be the famine, because I know, right? And you see, and my brother Benjamin sees, because I am speaking to you, maybe it's the Hebrew tongue, or maybe they actually recognize his face. And tell my father all of my honor here in Egypt and all that you have seen, and bring him down and bring my father here. I find that all to be exactly the same splinterism, favoritism as before. I find it to be not... I am one of the brothers right now, and I'm like, yeah, that's the guy we saw down there. Okay, it's like he still pulls off that holier than thou separatism, and it's, I don't know, I find it grating. And I also have a remember that at the end, God does find, there's a famous psalm that says, like, I rejected the tents of Joseph, and I chose Judah.
So, I mean, there's a lot in this, and what I'm not going to do right now is actually defend the textual reference, because I think that the pattern you're picking up there is an important pattern, and the problematics of Joseph we've already touched on. But I want to take it from a different angle. When I sat and watched The King of Dreams with my son, I asked him, because he said, why are we watching this now?
And he said, because you should recommend it.
Why?
No.
And I said, because there's a connection between the story of Joseph and Hanukkah.
Right.
Right? And I want to know what it is. An organic one. I mean, I could say lots of things from the Midrashim and et cetera, but I want to, like, when I just read the story of Joseph and then I read the story of the Maccabees, what's the connection? And I think that you just picked up on the connection right there, which is that the brothers hated Joseph because he was different. And for him to pretend that he wasn't different was not a solution to the problem. Now, granted, he didn't get there. He was so young and sort of full of this power that was flowing through him that he was a bit snot-nosed kid, and they did what they did. But in the same way, I feel that the Greek culture hated Am Yisrael because we were different. And even from within the cultural struggle, the Hellenists didn't want that. They don't want to be different. They want to be Greek-speaking Jews with their own little national thing going on, but really Greeks. So I think that that's the connection. That the connection is that there's an element of the particular and even the special, which is represented by Joseph amongst the brothers, which is represented by Am Yisrael amongst the nations, which cannot be avoided. It can't be erased from within by our own shame and to, like, ill ease at, like, it's not very nice. You know, like, what the chosen people, what does God think about the rest of the world?
Right.
Right? Which is a problem and needs to be addressed, but it can't be erased by pretending it's not there.
Right.
Right? At the same time, it's not a solution to stick our noses in the air and say, we're better than you are, because we know what that produces in the world, which is the opposite of our mission. It produces hatred and division.
Right.
Right? So what you're seeing here in Yosef is an owning of the fact that he is, listen, Tachlis, the guy is the viceroy of Egypt right now.
I know you're the viceroy because you've just been yo-yoing me back and forth through the land of Israel and Egypt, and you've been toying with us and hurting us and causing us great consternation. I got it. You're the boss. I got it.
In order to ascertain whether you actually understand what the problem here was. Right? And the problem was is that you hated me because of my mission. It's true you also hated me because of the way I acted, but you really hated me because I was different. You know, and the reality is I'm going to be different no matter if you hate me or not. But the reality is my difference could be in your service. Notice what he points out.
Right.
He says, God didn't send me down here to be great. It's true. Okay, should see all my honor and glory. He's still a little kid vis-a-vis his father. I think that that's a lot of what's happening there. Remember, his relationship with his father was interrupted at a stage of a, you know, sort of in a psycho-emotional sense. Yeah, he's still an adolescent in regard to his brothers. We all know this. You could grow up. You could move away. You could have your own family. You could be a CEO, president, king of Saudi Arabia. I don't care what. You go home, and the family gets together. And what happens? Everybody slips right back into those roles. So there's part of that you're hearing here. Right. But I think that the deeper issue, and it's an issue for Am Yisrael mamash today, and it goes to the heart of why I think that the secular Israel wants to succeed at the nation's game in a way which is just like, we're just like you, only more so. Whereas there's a core of Yudav of this specialness in Am Yisrael that we need to learn to deal with, because God does make him viceroy.
No doubt. He is
there on that elevated plane. And what do we do with that as a people? I don't think we're ready for it yet.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yes. As we say in Hebrew, we have a great phrase in Hebrew, which is Tzarich Iyun.
Yeah, right. But I think agreeing with your point about that I think the text is written in such a way as to communicate to us, like, don't think that the problem is gone. And we see it come back.
No, the problem is not gone. And he's going to also treat his brother. I didn't talk about this, but he's going to give his brother Benjamin more of a share.
He repeats his father's sins.
Right. Okay. Okay, next he's going to do, after the revelation, it's not done yet, because there's the big revelation, which is Jacob himself. And he's going to send these agalot, he's going to send these...
Wagons.
And you can kind of imagine a wagon, like a real...
I can't
nice
get the covered wagon, like... Oregon Trail image out of my head when I think of wagons.
I don't see it as covered. I see it as uncovered, but like wagon, and it's like a Cadillac of wagons. You know, you're just like, that's a nice wagon. You know what I mean? And it's like a nice, nice wagon. And he sent the wagon. And it's important to notice, by the way, that Joseph does not come to the land of Israel. He's kind of not allowed to come to the land of Israel, probably.
It doesn't seem like he's able
to leave. Later on, when Jacob passes away, it's a whole shtick. It's a whole permission to go to Canaan. And also, he doesn't just send him food every month or something like care packages. He's got to bring him down. That's part of his mission. And there's this famous lesson that kind of Jacob didn't actually believe the brothers until he saw these wagons. And there's a famous kind of
hint in there
that it's not even a hint. It's a kind of statement that the sages say, which is that the last thing that they were learning Torah together was the story of Egla Arufa, this calf that gets
the broken neck calf.
Broken neck calf. When a community finds somebody who's dead, like a guest in the community, but like nobody exactly knew who killed him, what happened? So the community gets together and they kill this calf, basically saying, we didn't spill this blood.
But you realize how that itself is a perush, an interpretation of the entire story of the relationship between Joseph, his father, and his brothers?
Right. I didn't
just like, well, no, he's saying to Jacob and his brothers, you didn't actually spill the blood.
Right.
But your hands aren't entirely clean.
That's right.
From what just happened.
That's right. That's right.
And that's why the elders of the city go out and they say, our hands are clean. It's like, what do you think, that the elders of the city killed him? No, they didn't escort him. They didn't take care of him. Like, he's basically saying to his father, there was more you could have done here.
There's a yeshivish joke that I think...
We promise we're going to do an outtake show with all our yeshivish jokes.
1% of the audience listening today will think this is funny.
But they'll really laugh.
They will not laugh. But I, when I first heard it, I really laughed. But it's a totally yeshivish joke, which is, you know, it says that soon afterwards, Jacob is going to send Yehuda down to Egypt to start new yeshivas.
Right.
So why? Because when he saw... that the agalot, the wagons, and he realized that he's still learning the same sugya be'iyun, he's like, we need a different kind of yeshiva.
I laugh. I think it's funny. I think you have to appreciate what's happening in the yeshiva world today to actually think that's funny. You're actually red-faced, right? You like
that
joke.
It's such a funny joke because it's like so many layers of...
You have to actually do that with your thumb when say it.
Yeah, it's like, we need a new yeshiva. He's still learning the same sugya be'iyun. Anyway, lachashuv, forget it, folks. Don't worry about that. If you didn't get it, don't even worry about it. It's total inner baseball.
If you've never sat for a year and a half on one page of Gemara.
That's right, exactly. Okay. Anyway, So once again, he sends the brothers up there, and Jacob doesn't believe it. And then when he sees these wagons, it says very beautifully, "Vatechi ruach Yaakov avim," and his spirit was enlivened. Some people explain simply that he actually passed out, that his heart kind of, it says that like his heart had a little beat, kind of skipped or something like that. And some people say on a simple level of Tichi Ruach that he was actually just strengthened. He was able to rise up from being like passed out a little bit from the news, shocking news before. But on the simple, on a deeper level, not on the simple level, on a deeper level, his whole spirit that was for 22 years in a dark place, and our rabbis tell us that basically he didn't have the spirit of prophecy for those 22 years. It returns now. And in fact, we're about to get to the last words of the Lord in the book of Genesis. Okay, yes. The last time that God speaks.
So important.
So important. It's one of the most beautiful things. I shed a tear reading this in preparation of our show today. And so it says, Vayomer Yisrael, Israel now, he's got his back, his big name again, Rav, O Joseph Bnicha, enough. My son Joseph is alive. Elecha Verenu Beteremut. I will go and see him before I die. Vayisa Yisrael, and Israel drove v'chol asher lo, all that he had, v'yavo be'er hashav, he came to Be'er Sheva, v'yisbach zvachim, he sacrifices l'elohe aviv Yitzchak, to the God of his father Isaac. And then God appears to him. So check out these verses, they're very, very deep and very meaningful. V'yomer Elokim l'Yisrael b'marot ha'layla, God said, and this is the name, the kind of nature name of God, the judgment name of God, said to Israel in the visions of the night. Vayomer Yaakov, Yaakov. Vayomer Hineni, says to him, Jacob, Jacob. He says, here I am, just like we remember with Abraham, just like we remember with Joseph. When your name is called, you say, here I am. And it says, Anochi Ha'el Elokei Avicha. I am the God of your forefathers. Al tira mirda mitzrayma. Don't be afraid of going down to Egypt. Meaning to say, it's telling us, revealing to us, Jacob is afraid to leave the land of Israel, afraid to go down to Egypt. He's been in Galut before in his life, and God had to show up and tell him in Beit El,
yep.
Right, to tell him. He says to him, for I'm going to make you into a big nation there. I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will indeed bring you back up, and Joseph is going to put his hands on your eyes, meaning to say when you pass away, he shall close your eyes, that type of thing. And there are many, many, many explanations about what just happened in these words. One of them is that God's presence is going down with the Jewish people. And we'll see in just a little bit, there's 69 kind of people that come down to Egypt. Some people say the 70th is actually Jacob. And other people say, no, it's actually God's presence that is the 70th that comes down. Other people say it's Yocheved, who was born on the way down as they were entering Egypt. But in any case, God says to Jacob, I'm going to be with you. And our sages, and I saw this in the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, which, by the way, I want to just parenthetically recommend that everybody get out there and buy the Eliyahu Monk five book set translation of the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. It's fabulous.
I've seen the guy behind me in shul learns it. It's
excellent. It's just fantastic. Great. Well done. Just well done. I know Art School has now put it out also, but I can attest that it's an excellent Or HaChaim. And he says, listen, the God is telling the Jewish people, the word Mitzrayim means a narrow place. I will be with you in those tough places.
Yes.
I will be with you in those tough places, and I'm going to come back with you going up. And the Or HaChaim says, he says, how could we say that God is going to be with you at a certain level, because there's a certain level of God, not his full godliness, but a certain revelation, exposure, a certain level of God, a certain volume of God, a certain brightness of God.
You turn that up to 11.
He's like, how can we say that? He's like, because this is not God. This is his presence. That's a different type of thing. And it comes into different people at different places to the amount that they could use. For example, 10 people praying in a synagogue, 10 men praying in a synagogue, 10 Jewish men praying in a synagogue or praying together, that is a certain amount of Shechina, a certain volume of Shechina joins them. A prophet will get as much as he needs without letting him get burnt, actually.
I mean, it all has to do with the nature of the kli, the nature of the vessel to receive, right? Always remember that God doesn't hold back. Right? God's presence is infinite and all-giving. The question is, how much can we receive?
Right.
And so, there's a reason that here at the gates of the land of Israel that God is having his last words, so to speak, with Yaakov, because we know that prophecy is is rooted in the experience of God in the land, right? And there's also a reason that the great concern that God has for Yaakov is his fear, right? And we see this is the first place, and this becomes a pattern in the rest of the Tanakh. Al Tira Avdi Yaakov. It's a beautiful song. I don't know if you sing it on Motzei Shabbos at Lav Malka at the fourth meal of Shabbat, lest you think that there are only three out there, right?
I'm very makbet on the fourth meal.
It's important, especially in the winter.
I'm makbet on the fourth meal.
Really?
Absolutely.
Even the summer?
I'm makbet on the fourth meal.
That's impressive.
I wash eat a cooked thing.
God bless you.
Yeah, no, that's a thing I accepted upon myself from the Baal Shem Tov.
That's like a thing. Yeah.
It's like a thing, and also it's a zgula for Parnosa to hear a Baal Shem Tov story or read a Baal Shem Tov story. So
yeah?
I tried it. Yeah, Motzei Shabbat. Yeah.
I didn't know that part.
Yeah.
That's like a thing.
And you wash and you eat a cooked item. It can't be just a shmir of the chumos.
Yeah, okay.
I always have usually fish or something like that that's left over. No, I'm not fit to do it.
That's awesome. So then you've certainly sang Al Tira Avdi Yaakov.
I usually wash the dishes. That takes a long time. Maybe I listen to your show or something else.
And then you sit.
And then I sit, and I usually turn on a YouTube video of Rabbi Stavsky telling one of his Baal Shem Tov stories.
Oh, that's great.
And I eat something. Full wash.
Yeah, it's a suda. Gotta be a suda, yeah.
That's right.
But you see the depth of this, that the great danger of exile is not actually what's going to happen to you. That's life. You're going to go down to Egypt. You're going to go into those narrow places. What lies ahead? Don't forget, he's pointing out here that this is a fulfillment of a promise that was made to Abraham, right? I'm going to find you, make you that goy gadol, that great nation that Abraham left his home to come to Eretz Israel. That's life. That's history. You can't get out of that. The danger is your fear. Why? Because fear narrows you. That's what God's saying. Don't be afraid because I'm going to be with you. The inverse of that is that if you want me to be with you, don't be afraid.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And because that's how you have a vessel which is wide enough to receive the presence of God, even in exile. And so here, this is like a watchword for all of us listening in our own life, in whether it's in our personal exiles or our national exile or our personal troubles or our national troubles. The great danger is not what happens to us. The danger is our fear, because that's what blocks us from receiving God's presence, even in the problem.
Yeah. Yes. and there's a lot of scary stuff out there.
And listen, I'm not saying fear is irrational or, let it go.
It makes me think about something like different but related, which is I get pissed off. Sorry if I use that word, but I do. I really get agitated, angry,
upset
at the education system. For example,
your kids are still young.
Talk to kids about fear.
Yeah.
Talk to them about fear. Allay their fears by teaching them the scary things of life and how to deal with them. For example, economics or health.
Right.
Why are you teaching them French history, for God's sakes? Okay, it's like it won't be retained. Teach them the stuff of life. Teach them how to deal with emotional issues. Yeah. Is there a class on emotional issues? No. Is there a class on basic finances in the Jewish system? No. Is there a class on basic health? No. It's like teach them these things. Teach them that's in part it's a psychological thing, and you don't have to get to my advanced age of 42 to fear. That's a big thing that you have to cope with and overcome it. And if you can think about this stuff early, you're so ahead of the game. And it frustrates me that we don't get to teach this kind of stuff.
I mean, it's a bigger issue, but I'll just throw it out there. It's because our educational system is still based in the mass production modern era. Human being is a producer and a consumer.
Still,
that's what I'm saying. What you're speaking about is an educational system that is about human potential, and that the human being is actually a little spark of redemption. Right.
Those are big categories that you're throwing out, and you're probably totally right that those are the right categories. But another way of saying it is to build a healthy human being, teach him the things that we've already understood are the fundamentals of health.
I understand, but on a less sort of abstract language, I don't know if it's less abstract, but more to the point, is that our educational system is about productivizing.
Right.
And the human being is either a producer or a consumer. Right, or a commodity, frankly. Right. So what you're speaking about is actually a human being a human being.
Right.
And the truth of the matter is, I can hear all these teachers saying, but what are they going to do? How are they going to get into university when they know how to not be afraid? Which is ridiculous. Because as we all know, having gone through the educational system, what they taught you in high school is not what made you succeed in life. What made you succeed
not
in life was some sense of belief in yourself, God, and some way of navigating the world.
Speaking of that, speaking of educational system, I do want to say, I think I was... I was wrong not to mention earlier that we are on the Land of Israel Network, a great educational institution, if you will.
A platform
for
really, the world.
A broadcast platform that is broadcasting great shows, including your other show, The Jewish Story.
Gosh, I finally made it out to visit Ari and Jeremy last week.
How was that?
Awesome.
Yeah,
that place
you.
Is looking amazing.
Yeah, no, it's awesome.
Amazing. Except for they dug a huge ditch that Ari had to jump across to actually get into his house. But it like happened that morning.
So there you go. So that's the farm. I also call it sometimes Mount Gimple or Mount Abramowitz. But I like Mount
Gimple. Mount Gimple has a bit of ring.
Yeah, Mount Gimple. That's right. So if you haven't been out to Mount Gimple, you should check it out. It's incredible. And
the headquarters.
And the network in general is doing amazing things. I'm very proud of this network, very proud to be associated with it. And we continue to broadcast. And we, of course, need your support. All of us need your support jointly and severally. So help by donating. And it's coming close to the end of the year now.
So you want to unload all that cash that's just laying around in piles in your living room.
Right, because the good America and other countries...
Give it to us instead of the government.
That's right. That's right. Give it to us. And we're going to keep broadcasting with your help. So please check out the landofisrael.com page. Donate there. And also now thejewishstory.com.
That's jewishstory.co.
.co.
Right, and Jewish Story Podcast on Facebook. Getting a lot of traction there.
There you go. The Jewish Story Podcast on Facebook. Is that what it's called? Okay, very good. And Yishai Fleischer at all venues are there for you. And I also want to thank our sponsors, including Tchelet, the True Blue Jews. The Tchelet Revolution is an incredible thing. And when you see another Jew wearing Tchelet, you're like, yeah, you got it. You're on the team. And when you see somebody who's not there, you're like, he's yet to fully join the team, and he's going to be there tomorrow. I might mention it to him now. Oh, by the way, I had a spiritual breakthrough.
Whoa.
This was an amazing thing. I was in the synagogue.
It's a good place for a spiritual.
I actually never been to a synagogue in my life. I was in the Beit Knesset. Okay, I was not in the synagogue.
I grew up going to temple.
Okay. At least you're going to temple. I don't know what a synagogue is. Some kind of Greek thing. No, I went to the Beit Knesset, to the Beit Tefillah, and there I was with some of my beloved brethren that hail from North America.
Mm-hmm. It happens,
and they are a lovely bunch. And however, one of the things that they're prone to, even in times of crisis, is to talk about some team in some place throwing around one kind of ball or another. Okay,
I saw it coming.
And they like to mention beautiful names, many times of Spanish origin, like Velasquez and other people of great valor who are able to do different things with the ball,
make conquests on the field of play.
And this was exactly the morning after the terror that we faced in Ofrat. And my gut reaction, the old Yishai before the spiritual breakthrough, was to say, hey guys, did you guys hear that something real's going on instead of this crapola that you're talking about, which the whole world doesn't want Jewish people in Judea to talk about some team in Florida? But instead, Rabbi Mike Foer, I'm proud to say that I was like, I just came up to them gently and I was like, you guys know the name of the people that we're praying for? And I told them the name. Shiraya El Bat Liora Sara, and they're like, "Yeah, you're right. Thank you so much." And we just had a total. I did not confront them at all about anything, and I even didn't feel it wasn't that I even overcame myself. I felt a love for my brothers, and that I was able to kind of share with them what are the more important issues at that moment, and so that was a little breakthrough.
You should be blessed. That should carry you for miles and miles.
Amen. It did feel better, and I felt like a better person. And you said we were talking before the show. You said since the holidays you've been feeling a little bit. This Hanukkah was I felt
because you're a chassid.
I don't know what it is. It's a natural thing. I just felt Hanukkah really lifted me. It's a chassid slash nationalist slash.
It's true. It's true.
It like it comes together.
The chassidim were the spiritual nationalists.
Right. But it comes together like on Hanukkah.
It all comes
together.
It's definitely. It's always like, my deepest time.
It's like Zionism and spirituality and spiritual.
And I can still cook.
That's right. And there's like no big requirements except for awesome Easter candles. Malacha,
yeah.
My mother told me that in old Algeria, the Jews used to keep Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, that they would light one
up and down.
Yeah, up and down, right.
Oh.
And then in the middle, it would kind of come together. Okay, let's finish up. There's more to talk about in this week's Torah portion, but I just want to, I guess, touch one more thing, which is at the end, when the children of Israel and Israel come down to Egypt, they have to see the big man, and that's Pharaoh himself. And one of the things that happens is that Joseph brings Jacob in front of Pharaoh. He puts him up in front of Pharaoh, and Jacob blesses Pharaoh. And Pharaoh says to him, "My, how old are you? That's what he says. Interestingly,
it's a great moment. Just picture Jacob like hobbling in there. He's like, "Oh."
You know what I was thinking about? I was thinking this is actually just as weird as the fact that Torah tells us that it's Pharaoh's birthday. I was like, there's a connection here. I'm not sure what it is. I didn't break it down, but I'm like, they tell us it's Pharaoh's birthday, and he pardons people, and he hands people.
I mean, like, what do I care that it's his birthday?
Yeah, like, who cares? What is that even important? And then here it tells us that the first thing he asks Jacob is, how old are you? Maybe it's to show us that Pharaoh is concerned with time and with age. I'm not sure what it is.
Well, we know that the Egyptian culture of his day was obsessed with death.
Right.
Right. And the idea of living forever. And that's why embalming and the pyramids. It could just be a natural reflection of the culture within which the story is embedded.
Right. I heard another explanation, which is more kind of cute than real, but that basically Pharaoh had a very short entrance, the doorway to his...
His palace?
His court. His court was very short. It was very short, so you had to come down and stoop and bow down to the idols that were around him, bow down to him as an idol as well.
Interesting.
And that when Avraham Avinu walked through, somehow the opening...
Even Yaakov did.
No, when Avraham Avinu walked then he walked in, and somehow...
He just made it through without bowing.
He made it through without bowing, and 100 years later comes Jacob, and the same thing happened. So Pharaoh's like... Are you that same guy?
Are you that guy? Because I'm the same Pharaoh.
Right. How old are you? But is he the same Pharaoh? And this, yeah. Okay, not necessarily. But in any case, he asks him, like, how old are you? And here comes one of the weirdest things in the whole Torah, I think. He says, Jacob answered Pharaoh, the years of my sojourns have been 130 years. Few and bad have been the days of the years of my life, and have not reached the lifespans of my forefathers in the days of their sojourns. Then Jacob blessed Pharaoh and left Pharaoh's presence. Oh, I mean, that's a bummer. Why'd you say it that way?
It's like I'm old and bitter. Thank you very much for asking.
Something like that, right?
Well, you should be healthy and well. Goodbye.
I think you nailed it.
Rabbi Bavender there.
It's funny. I was like Mel Brooks. It's like a Mel Brooks moment. A Mel Brooks type moment. Bad. My years have been. I'm old and sick.
You should enjoy your life.
God bless you. See you later. Where's the shmia? Okay. We didn't get to Shmir yet. Shmir, it's in Parsha, in Shmot. We'll learn about shmiring the walls. one of the Jewish words. My take on that is, now the sages say that he got punished for these negative terms.
Mm-hmm.
My sense is that he is just trying to deflect the focus from Israel and from himself and from his success.
There's nothing astonishing. It's been a hard life, you know.
Right. Right, like, don't look here. There's nothing. The fact that I'm wealthy, the fact that I got all this family, there's nothing. Don't mind me.
It's been a hard life.
Sorry. Right, right.
You don't want what I got.
Like blianera.
Yeah, right? you don't want what I got.
That's my feeling. What do you think?
It is a strange. It is a strange interaction, and I think that the question of age and timing and dating and numbers anyway in this whole section is a bit of a mystery to me. It seems in many ways that in the midst of the narrative, it's very important that Torah give us some fixed points, because by knowing how old Yaakov is here, we trace backwards many pieces in the story.
Right.
For how old Yitzchak was when he died, for, you know, who was alive when, what happened.
And that's Rashi's great expertise.
Rashi, oh my gosh, it's like
he loves to give you the math. He loves to...
Well, he's echoing Seder Olam Rabbah.
Right.
Meaning the sages made an effort to understand the chronology of the Tanakh, in my eyes, in order to set themselves clear on where they were in the progress of the unfolding of the divine plan. So this statement here on its own, in the narrative flow, I think that what you said is very appropriate. Like, we see later that one of Yosef's big concerns is that Pharaoh is going to be too impressed with his brothers, he'll take them to be his servants, etc. So Yaakov is like, you know, he's shown himself as a wrinkled old man who's had a hard life, you know.
Right.
But on the on a broader plane, I think
and
these,
Jewish people do that. I want all the listeners to understand. Jewish people, successful ones, all kinds. Like, okay, so and maybe, by the way, this is very in contradistinction to the Joseph words of the beginning of the Torah portion. You'll meet a lot of Jewish people, they especially Sephardi people, they believe in what's called the Ayin Hara. They believe in too much attention will bring problems, and just keeping things on the kind of DL, as they say.
Yeah, I mean, and we don't even have to get spiritual and heebie-jeebie about it. We see already back in the time of the Gemara that a person shouldn't, sort of like, shouldn't boast, shouldn't display their wealth. Why? Because it just creates envy in the hearts of people around
right.
you without getting into the spiritual questions, which are also there. Right? So it could be that element. Aside from that, I don't know, it's a mysterious meeting here.
It is a mysterious thing. And the last thing in the Torah portion is that indeed the famine continues and the Joseph is going to do something which is... what's the word I'm looking at? Nebuchadnezzarish? No. What was the Assyrian guy? The guy Sancheirivish. He's gonna Sancheirivize like one of those blenders. He's gonna blenderize, or
all
as,
Egypt.
As the Zev would say, he would judge that's another Jewy term. A judger. You know what a judger is?
I know what a judger is. That's a Jewish term.
I don't think that the goyim in the world are like...
Okay, send us hashtag zhuzher.
I got to zhuzh this compote. I don't think that that is a Gentile term. But maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know. I'm not buying that.
You don't think so? You don't think it's a Jewy term?
I know my mom uses it, so you could be right.
She says the word zhuzh, doesn't
she?
Yeah,
she does.
Okay, so you're... Okay, there you go.
Right. So let's explain to people who might have any idea what you're talking about, what we're talking about here.
Joseph is going to start mixing up the populations. Basically, he's going to move them from the farmland to the cities. He's going to feed them, and they're going to end up selling their animals, their land, and themselves to Joseph. And he's going to create this system.
He creates the system of slavery in which Am Yisrael eventually finds itself bound.
Right.
And it's a really tough end to this whole arc of the story that what we see from Joseph is his vision of greatness also becomes the instrument of the downfall of his people, but at the same time,
but that's his vision. That means to say he's fulfilling that vision.
I mean, he's fulfilling the vision, and we know that the oppression itself, which results, you know, that Am Yisrael in slavery, is what finally transforms us.
That's what I'm saying.
Into a great nation.
He is the ultimate crankshaft. He's the ultimate tool of God's. I would say like. I think that if Abraham would be in Joseph's position, he'd be like, "Say what, Lord? That doesn't.
I'm not doing that.
But yeah, no. Or erase me from your book, or I don't want
right.
to." And Joseph is like, "Okay,
I can do that.
Yeah,
we can get that done.
I'll be the crankshaft. You want it this way, Lord? That's fine. We'll do crazy stuff for you to fulfill your vision because that's more important. There's something awesome about that. There's something a bit, I would say, not quite human about that.
It is. I mean, I think also it's important to not see this. Through too much of a present eye, right? That today when our concern for every human being is of a much higher degree than it was in the ancient world, especially because likely the context for these events was the invasion of the Semitic peoples into Egypt and the takeover of the land, in which case to enslave the native Egyptians and sort of plug them into an economic system at the height of which stood this sort of foreign ruling power was just the way you rolled in the ancient world.
And within that, there's a small Jewish nation. The last verse of this week's Torah portion is, "Thus Israel settled in the land of Egypt in the region of Goshen. They acquired property in it and were fruitful and multiplied greatly." Okay, so they're making it in Egypt. They're going to be successful. Next week's Torah portion is the last hurrah. We're going to learn about Jacob's death, Joseph's death. We're going to learn about the blessings that Jacob gives his children. The word Goshen or Goshna, meaning to say going to Goshen, is famously... on the dreidel in Chutz La'aretz, right? Gimel Nes Gadol Hayasham, which is Goshna, which is the acronym is Goshna, which is the where the Jews were in diaspora, and in the Hebrew in Israeli, it's Nes Gadol Hayapo, which is Gofna, and Gofna are the mountains where actually that's where Beit El is, that's where the Maccabees hid out, so or Jifna today, the mountains are there. That's an interesting Hanukkah thing. And that's it. We're done with for this week, Rabbi Mike Foer. I again want to dedicate this show. First thing, I want to thank all the folks that make the show possible. Thank you so much. You know who you are, and I really, really appreciate your help. We all appreciate your help. And I guess those of us who are listening appreciate your help. So thank you very much. Write us an email, Ishai@thelandofisrael.com, RavMike@thelandofisrael.com. Check out our respective social media presences, and hopefully we're filling it with God's presence. What was I going to say? Landofisrael.com, email, right? What else?
You were going to dedicate the show.
Oh, dedicate the show. That's right. Thank you. And I'm going to dedicate the show to the speedy recovery, which is being fought over right now, literally. I know this from firsthand knowledge, so please believe me when I say that this child, who's 30 weeks old, is fighting for his life, and his name is Tinoch, which means baby. Ben. Shira Yael Bat Liora Sara. We're going to dedicate the show to this baby, and we're going to ask Hashem for another Hanukkah miracle. Sorry, God, we've got to ask you for another miracle.
Squeeze one out.
Yeah, we got to beg of you, and please don't give the terrorists any joy in this Hanukkah, which I could still feel the spirit of. Furthermore, I want to tell you just one last thing, which is Airbnb is going through a lot of attacks, legal attacks, moral attacks, other attacks. The latest is that Airbnb is now considering, or is actually going to block, Arab and Palestinians who also live in Judea and Samaria in the West Bank, and block them. Now, ironically, that is so dumb, and I'm going to be writing that we're not asking for that either. We're not asking for equality.
That's called cutting off your nose to spite your face.
You know what the truth is.
Let's all be miserable. Yeah, thank you very much. That's the solution.
Right. And you know what the dumb thing about Airbnb is? It's like, I respect the fact that you guys are socially conscious. I get that. That's cool. But on the other hand, there are 200 conflicts in the world. And there's a Forbes magazine piece right now on Airbnb. And they actually have a professor being like, they picked a weird, very emotional issue, which is small compared to some of the other ones, and they're not blocking the 200 some odd other conflicts. And I'm thinking to myself, guys, there's a simple way out of this, which is we don't deal with conflicts. We're not
a political organization.
Right.
We provide a service so that people can stay where they want to in the world.
Right. And guess what? We're not going to fix anything by blocking anybody. If I want to go see the occupation in northern Cyprus, in Turkish Cyprus, then that's where I want to go. What does it have to do? It's not going to help one iota to anybody. So I really hope that. Oh, and so the thing I want to say about Airbnb is this attack has also gone all the way to the top at Airbnb, and people are saying to them, including a tweet that I got out yesterday, which I know for a fact was seen by the CEO of Airbnb, which is that in some way Airbnb is complicit with some of these attacks recently because it sent a word to the terrorist, which is
what you're doing is working.
Right. And these people don't belong here. And you have every right to attack them, because if they can't even, you know, show their houses on the marketplace, they have no right to be here. And their blood is mutar.
Made available.
Their blood is cheap now.
Yeah.
And Airbnb is suffering because of that. What a idiotic mistake. What a bad road that they were led down on. And here again, I want to believe in tshuva. I want to believe that they can repent and change their mind
mess it up, you can still fix it.
Amen. All right, folks, you are listening to the Ishai Fleischer Show. Stay tuned. We're going to try to have a few more pieces on the show today. I'm not making any promises. You know how it is. It's fluid around here, folks. It's fluid. But I'm going to try to get a few more pieces to the show. Thank you so much for sticking with us. Thank you to you, Rabbi Mike Foer.
Always a pleasure.
More great stuff is on the way, but stay tuned, stay strong, stay connected. Keep tuning in to God's podcast, because he is broadcasting every single day. All we have to do is tune in. Like Rabbi Mike said, he doesn't want to hold back. He wants to give, and we just have to have permission to receive. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Inshallah.
If you want to improve relations between Israel and American Jews, one of the things that you should do is encourage people to listen to the Land of Israel Network. Listen to Eve Harrow, and listen to Yishai Fleischer, and listen to Ari and Jeremy, and Shlomo Katz, and listen to Mike Foer, and listen to Josh Haston, because the Land of Israel Network has a mission, and that's to spread love between Israel and American Jews. There's so much to love about Israel. There's so much to love about Israelis. And I think the Land of Israel Network is part of the solution. You are all part of the solution.
You're listening to the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com, broadcasting the truth and beauty of Israel to the world.
All right, folks, shalom, and welcome back to the Yishai Fleischer Show, broadcasting from Judea this half, and we are joined by our delightful Malka Fleischer. Shalom, Malka.
Hi, Yishai. Good to be back on the show.
Thank you so much for
I got a little cold. Do you hear that?
Yeah, I hear it. We hear it.
It started on our Hanukkah vacation to Shifta.
Yes.
Speaking of which, Yishai, I wrote an article this week. I don't know if you saw it. I sent it to you, but you don't always read the links.
I saw it.
You know what I'm talking about, wives. You know?
What, the
husbands? You send them the links, and then you're like, hey, did you look at that? And they're like, no. Anyway.
I don't think every husband is like that. That's a particular, that might be a Yishaism. I don't know.
Anyway, I sent you a link, Yisha. I wrote an article this week that we were over Hanukkah in Shifta, which is a Byzantine and Roman era, like, whole town in the Negev Desert that obviously is now a ruin, but it's being excavated, and our kids got to like see a little bit the archaeologists excavating. Anyway, over Hanukkah, basically, like as soon as we left, they found an ancient wick, like, you know, for an oil lamp. So this is considered a pretty rare find. They don't often find wicks because they're made of fabric, right? They're made of something. Fabric or cotton or flax, all these different things. And they disintegrate over millennia of time. But because Shifta is in the desert and is really quite dry, and the ruins have been, like your mother explained to me, when ruins are ruins, whatever is underneath in the sand is kind of well preserved, because sand is very good at preserving things. But once you take them out, then it's like a race against time to make sure that these things are like preserved properly out in the air, because they just like totally fall apart.
Right.
So on the eighth day of Hanukkah, it was announced that they found a wick. Now that's like oddly incredibly appropriate, right? Because Hanukkah is the holiday of wicks. You know, you're like lighting the Hanukkah candles every night. On the other hand, it's almost a total certainty that the wick was not a Jewish wick, because Shifta was a Christian town. It was controlled by the Romans, by the Byzantines, and it was a Christian town. But anyway, I was filled with happiness and pride that the place that we went for vacation had this like great discovery, and it was done like by people that we met. You know what I mean? By people that we met, and like kind of in the backyard of our vacation. And it really felt, as we were staying in the bed and breakfast that belonged previously to the American Cult Expedition members who originally came to Shifta to excavate it. We got to like walk around the ruins like it was like our kid's backyard. It was just really cool.
It was really cool. And you know, there was a sweetness of that holiday to spend it with our children. Not everybody's going to get to do that, and that's because this show and previous half, which I recorded this morning, I dedicated it to the speedy recovery of a baby by the name of Tinok Ben Shiraya El, and I just finished off the last half this morning with Rabbi Mike Foyer talking about that. After that, I went to do some work. I was in the Talpiot shopping area. I was looking for a new phone, doing all that kind of stuff, and did some more work. And then I went to the hospital to actually go see the family, the Silberstein family, who I'm friends with, we're friends with from Beit El. And as I got there, just as I got there around 6:30, they kind of shooed me. I walked in, and immediately they were shooing me out, and something was going on, and I sensed there was a problem, and I started saying Tehillim.
Psalms.
And you know what? There was a family member who was like, just please leave. And I'm like, okay, sure, of course, right? Like, but instead of like leaving, I just went to the general hallway because I could feel that there was something in the air. And I just opened up my phone and started saying simple old psalms. And as I was saying some psalms about where the, when I got to the third psalm, I have an app from Channel 2 News that gives me push notifications, mm-hmm. and it went beep, beep, and it appeared on my screen that this baby had passed away.
So, such a punch to the gut. And, gosh, there's, like, how many hours of talking do we have available for this show, Ishai? Because it will take hours of talking to encompass all the feelings and thoughts that go along with the murder of a little Jewish baby. It's the murder of so many things, Ishai. It's really, it's so painful. And we were talking about it over dinner a little bit. It's not just, I'm also a doula. I'm also a birth coach. So the issue of birth and having babies is an issue that's close to my heart. And also as a mother of three children, you know, I think that every mother, whether she liked birth or didn't like birth, she experienced it in some form or fashion. And so, you know, there's a connection there. And this was Shira is just very young. She'd just been married for 9 months. When this happened, which means that she got pregnant pretty fast, right, after getting married. And this baby, like, not only did she not get to deliver her baby, right, she, like, was under anesthesia and the baby was taken out of her, and then she was under for a while and she didn't, and then she came out of it, you know, the coma thing, the sedation, and they didn't tell her that they had to take out the baby because she was fragile. And they didn't want to, like, upset her body, you know what I mean? To make her too upset and to risk putting her, you know, in threat of harm. And then finally they basically told her, like, hey, you're not pregnant anymore. Like, your baby's on the outside. And I guess they told her something about his situation.
And I just want to add about that situation that since he was injured in the shooting, and we're talking about the Ofra Junction shooting.
Right.
It turns out that blood goes to the certain organs immediately. In any case, when you're injured, it goes to, like, emergency organs. And basically, he was oxygen deprived for about an hour.
Oh, because she had been shot, so the blood was no longer.
And I think also the baby was shot. Also
was
had,
he? My gosh.
Yes, no, he was also hit, injured. Rav Marachti in many different.
Oh, the poor thing.
Yeah, this little 30-week-old baby.
And
was,
he managed. So it's kind of amazing, really, that he managed to hang on for 4 days. It sounds like.
Yeah.
But at the same time, Isha, you know, 30 weeks. Taking terrorists and the nation of death out of the picture. 30 weeks is a preemie, but it's not what's called a micro preemie.
Right.
A micro preemie is a baby that's, like, so young that there's a very strong chance that it will not survive, that it will have major problems. But at 30 weeks, a baby is not a micro preemie anymore. It's just a preemie.
Right.
And under other circumstances, let's say her water had broken or whatever, and she'd have to deliver this baby. So there would have been a very good chance that it would have survived. But nonetheless, you know, a woman is like, it's Hanukkah. She's pregnant.
Right.
You know, she's probably starting to think about all the, you know, a lot of times in the traditional and the Orthodox Jewish circles, you don't buy baby apparel or baby supplies early. It's considered like you buy the stuff after you already have a baby and everything's gone well and everything. But she's probably started to think about it. And of course, she had the big belly and it was her first child and she's newly married. And I don't know whether her parents had other grandchildren or if this was like the first grandchild in the family, because I know that she's one of the older kids.
Right.
And, you know, she didn't even get to experience the birth, but nonetheless, when a baby is born, however it's born, someone else is also born, and that's the mother. There wasn't a mother. There was a woman. There was a wife. There was a daughter. But there was no mother. And when this baby was born, she became a mother. The mother was born. And now that the baby is gone, what is she? Is she a mother? Yes, right? She has a baby that she'll always remember for the rest of her life.
Right.
but she hasn't.
Who was murdered?
Who
by
was
the haters.
Murdered? And she couldn't protect him, and she couldn't save him, and you know her body did its best for him, but couldn't do for him.
And the doctors did their best. Needed,
and everyone did their best, and the whole nation was praying for him.
Yeah.
But at the same time, is she a mother? No, she's not. She has no child. She goes home. She starts from square one. She's not pregnant. My guess is that the doctors will tell her that it should be some time before she should try to get pregnant again. If she was shot in the womb, that probably she needs a significant amount of time to heal that injury. And she goes home empty-handed.
Okay.
And it really hurts me so much. I only take comfort in a couple of things. One is that I know that the whole nation and the hospital, Shaare Tzedek Medical Center, did their best. And when you do your best, that's your best, right? And there's a certain comfort to that. And the second thing is I know her family, and I know that they're God-fearing people, and that they will help her through this in every kind of way, physically and spiritually. And the truth is that she herself was very close to... you know, to not making it.
Yeah, and here I want to pause for a second, Malka, and tell you that everybody told me in the hospital that her life was spared miraculously, and that bullets missed major things, and other miracles that happened in her life was spared, and she's doing remarkably well, given the kind of bullets and all the things. And I have to tell you, as we're talking right now, is the burial is taking place on the Mount of Olives. And I am already past a certain part because I've been dealing this with really for many days.
Right. So
the nations,
right.
And especially because I was there with the death. And just right now I suddenly feel a certain surge of thankfulness to this baby for kind of taking the heat and giving his mom life again. Kind of somehow protecting his mother and maybe taking it for her. Wow. Maybe. And okay, of course, I don't know anything, but that's my feeling. It's not even a feeling. It's like a feeling, you know what I'm saying? And I'm just kind of thankful for this little amazing soul that came down into this world and was a defender of Israel, brought the Jewish people together, and died as a pure soul, totally pure soul in this world. And I don't know what else can be said, but
right.
Now I have to tell you about another weird thing that happened at the hospital. So, okay, here we go. Strike me down for not being totally politically correct here, okay? So I'm on the eighth floor, and I got to go back down. The exit out of the hospital is on the second and first floor, but I press two. No, yeah, I press two, and I go out, and... as I come down out, guess who's coming in? About 15 Arabs, dressed like Arabs, meaning to say Muslim, full Muslim gear.
Outwardly looking.
Right. And they're all talking Arabic, right. And this and that, and they're all jihabbed out. I don't know what if they're jihadist or not.
Hijab, not jihad.
Hijab, not jihad. Sorry, my mistake.
Hijab is a head covering.
The whole regalia, okay? And I was just like, and here's my thinking to myself. I was like, okay, there's two ways for me to analyze this. The liberal approach would be, how beautiful. On the one hand, you know, somebody hurt this baby, but on the other hand, Israel is healing and helping all of these right. Arabs, and we're bridging
they
the divide.
They do what they do, but we do what we do, and we're not right. going to change for them.
Or you can even, that's semi-liberal. There's even more liberal, which is like Israel's a place of coexistence and this and that. And past these problems, there's also a lot of, all that kind of like nice
way. There's nice things that happen also between Arabs and Jews.
Right, like, and we're healing them, and the kind of thing that happened in Pittsburgh, look at this Jewish doctor, he's healing this, you know.
Right.
And then there was another part of me, which is the more Russian / right-wing part, the more Jabotinsky part, this other thinking, which is like, what the hell are you doing here? You likely, by your dress and by your appearance, and I saw some bearded type dudes and all that, are sympathizers to this crime. I don't know for sure. I'm not going to say that you definitely are, but there's a likelihood. There's a likelihood given that society, you know, there's a likelihood. Let's put it this way. There's a very strong likelihood that where the village, neighborhood, or place that these people came from is a no-go zone for Jews, is a dangerous place for Jews. There's a high likelihood of that.
Right.
Because almost all the Arab neighborhoods in Jerusalem, not all, there are some that are not, but all, of, but most are.
And you assume they're from Jerusalem.
Wherever they're from, wherever they're from, the likelihood is it's a dangerous place for Jews because of bad ideology. Come on, now this is the other side talking. Let's sweep past for a second all the niceties. Let's be real. The likelihood is that these folks believe in jihad, and here we are treating them like a bunch of suckers. And there's a part of me that said, like, what the hell are you doing here in my hospital, in my country, when I just came from upstairs where your folks killed a baby that you probably support their actions, okay? And I was just, okay, there was that part as well. And I struggled within myself between these two kind of approaches, given that
What'd
I am...
What did you decide?
Well, you know, I have, you know...
I guess you decided both.
I decided to talk about it with you. That's what
right.
I decided, you know? And I can, you know, let's put it this way. When you're coming from the downstairs, from upstairs, where the baby that you've been praying for 4 days, that was shot by drive-by shooting in a beautiful place of Afra by a Muslim jihadist, so you're a little bit you're angry, right? And so I wasn't exactly in the mood to be all huggy kissy, okay, with the Ishmaelites. I wasn't in the mood for that. All right, I was not so happy. I kept walking. I didn't say a thing or do anything, but but it registered in my mind that it registered. That there's an absurdity in all the situations. There's an absurdity there, and there's something wrong with that, and there's something wrong with that we're treating people who have not sworn allegiance to our country, to our state, to defend the Jewish state, but in fact are part of a fifth column that exists here in Israel. And that's a problem. On the other hand, you know, the fact that Israel is able to embrace others, and that the Arabs can live in this country and have, you know, rights and freedoms, is a good thing that I believe in general. But I do believe that those people who make use of those rights and freedoms and liberties need to swear allegiance and need to uphold allegiance to the Jewish state in which they live, and which grants them this great hospital that they're coming to visit right now. All right, so that was like a. That was like a thing that happened, you know. It was like a real thing that happened, you know. Most people are dealing with this just reading about it in the news, but I was there,
right?
And, you know, I faced
you lived
this
it, yeah.
I lived that moment, and certainly you and I know very well where that Afra Junction is, and
sure, it's on a very scenic road in the kind of lower Samaria.
It's not a scenic road. It's the scenic road. This is the road. It's the central
road.
Right.
It's the main road. And we lived in Beit El, which is the neighbor town to Ofra. And this girl, Shira Yael, she grew up in Beit El, just down the street
from where she was shot. Do you know where she was going?
She was going to Elon Moreh.
Elon Moreh. Okay.
Which is where she lives. We have friends also who live
in
Elon Moreh. And that is also a very beautiful, religious and strong town. In really up in Samaria, right across from the tomb of Joseph.
Right, absolutely. And we're reading about the Torah portions of Joseph. I got home and I just took out a beer, a Hoegaarden made in Belgium, and I just want to say l'chaim to this incredible baby. I don't know, just an incredible soul, and I thank Hashem for that tzchut. Of the merit to have been there to say some psalms for him, it is to kind of take him in his last moments, and he is being buried as we speak, probably already done, on the Mount of Olives. It's a rainy night. It's a dark night. He's going out. He's going out strong. I think this reminds me just of one more thing that I want to talk about on today's show with you, Malk, and that is that a few weeks ago, no, not a few weeks ago, last week, I was tapped to speak to a German group. Now, I don't always jump at the chance to speak to a German group, except for this kind, which
I don't buy German anything.
Right. We try not to buy German stuff so much. We're still not so, you know, pleased with them. Although, you know, for example, in Austria, they have a great new chancellor, Kurz. But with Germany, it's a different feeling. And I've had a lot of bad run-ins with German press and German tourists that are been anti-Israel and strongly so on some of the Euro tours that I speak to. But this is different, and this was a German group that is pro-Israel Christian folks, Bible folks. And so there's a word in Yiddish which reminds me of German, just close to German, which is Herzig. So full of heart, you know, so full of heart. And I actually jump at the opportunity to speak to this group because they really, you know, they really come here to love Israel and to share its pains, its tribulations, and its successes. And I didn't. They were supposed to come to Efrat to speak to me, and I was like, where am I going to talk with them exactly? I had no idea where to talk to them. And their smart Israeli German speaking tour guide said to me, how about we go meet where Ari Fold was murdered at the mall here at the Gush Junction? I'm like, that is brilliant. And it, too, was a cold day. And we stood outside. And right there where Ari kind of shot and took his last steps and stand, there are posters there that say, thank you, Ari. Because the owner of the falafel place right there, the woman believes that Ari saved her life because he chased down this terrorist who actually tried to stab her.
Who was chasing her?
Who was chasing her like some kind of, like some kind of evil,
terrorist.
More than terrorist, the Reaper, you know, like the death, literally chasing her, you know.
And so Ari, I'm sensing a pattern.
There's a pattern. And here's there's two patterns. There's the pattern of the chaotic entropy of death, and then there's the other pattern of this heroic, holy spirits that push back and win every time. And Ari Fold, with total miraculous strength, was able to chase down and shoot at, and by the way, three other people were shooting at him, and only Ari's bullets hit him.
Wow.
The terrorist. And
what's
yeah,
wrong with those other people?
You know, he had the schut. And so anyway, my point too is, we spoke there, and I came home too, and I said to you, Malka, these they're so moved, and
the German group,
and then you said something to me. I'll let you say it.
Okay. I hope I can say it in the same way that I said it before, but I just said, you know, you were explaining to me how moved they were and that they said to you, you know, that they really want you to know how sorry they are for the things that happened in the past and that they're friends of Israel.
That's what they said to me. They go to me, we just want you to know that you have real friends in Germany. And I'm like, I know. That's why I'm speaking to you, because I know that not all Germans are bad, and I know that there's a good heart in you, and I know that you care so much, and I could see that by me saying it to them, they were like choking up, like they were like, oh, they were like choking right up when I was like, I know you are good people, I know you want to be part of this thing. They were like, ah, they were like holding, and you know, they're not, Germans are not great at showing emotion, so it like looks like a very uncomfortable feeling when they're like starting to choke up like that. It's not like an easy cry. It's like, you know, they're really, it's not easy for them to go like that. But you said something to me, and I cut you off, which is,
that's
what?
Okay. Maybe you should say what you remember that I said.
You said to me, Yishai, you got to know that people like them harbor a tremendous, tremendous guilt, a tremendous sense that their peoplehood has done a horrific crime, and they carry that, and they're searching for expiation, for to share that, to unburden that, to show that, and to shoulder that, you know, and that somebody like recognizes that, that's huge for them. It's a release for them.
You know, the Jewish people, contrary to what you'll read on social media, the propaganda that's perpetrated on a minute-to-minute basis by our enemies, the Jewish people don't have a history of genocide. I mean, we have it against us, right? But the Jewish people are generally speaking a non-violent people, right? We're not offensive. We don't take an offensive position. The last time we really took an offensive position in which we had to like go out and attack a nation was in biblical times, and in those times God was like, you got to do this, and we're like, no, we don't want to, and God's like, you have to do this, right? And it was a controversy, the policy that God himself put forth. Since then, a couple millennia have passed, and more than a couple millennia have passed, 3,000 years have passed, and the Jewish people are, we don't know that feeling. That's the point I'm trying to make. We don't know Jews are excellent at guilt. We like, that's one of our major national traits. But in real reality, the Jewish people, we don't have a lot as a nation to feel guilty for vis-a-vis other nations. We're like a pretty peaceful people. We've lived up until 70 years ago in other people's place, and we've tried to be good and contributing wherever we go. So these Germans whose grandparents committed knowingly over long swaths of time the most evil crimes against humanity, against our nation, and against others as well, they must live with a profound sense of dirtiness, of taintedness, and I think it's really amazing that they come out to Israel to make a connection with the Jewish people and to try to right the wrongs in any way that they can.
So I was actually on the way after that to go shopping for Shabbos, for Shabbat. For you, you had sent me a list of things. And one of the ladies there gave me 200 shekel, just like personally. She's like, something for your family. I usually, if I get 200 shekel, you know, 50 bucks, you know, I'll put in the tzedakah box or you know, I don't know, or... You know, it's like a gift. I don't know. I went with this 200 shekel, and I bought Shabbos groceries for my family. And I thought to myself, there is no greater usage of this German gift, of this pro-Israel German person who's a God believer, than to take these 200 shekels and to buy holy kosher food for the Shabbos table here in Yehuda.
Right, okay? to uplift their yeah, shekels in the way that they want.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is to contribute to Jewish life.
Jewish life.
And Jewish traditional continuity.
That's right. I think that's a great way to end today's program, Malka. The baby died. It's a tragedy. It's a travesty. It's a crime. It's a horrific crime. It's a heinous, horrific terrorist crime.
I understand
crime.
That Israel has killed...
Yes.
At least one of the terrorists
caught another guy. Yeah, they killed the main guy. They killed the shooter.
That's great.
Happy about that. 30 minutes ago. That's right. Happy about that. That's right.
That's called justice.
That's right.
We have to live in a world of justice. Justice is one of the commandments, Yishai, that is given not just to Jews, but also to non-Jews. It's
correct.
One of the most fundamental principles upon which the entire world rests. If there's no justice... Mm-hmm. Then the world is super messed up. You can't live like that.
That's right. So the bad guy's dead and good. The world is better for that. When the righteous die, that's bad for the world. But when the wicked get taken down, that's good for the world. But at the same time, the righteous passed away today. And the first part of the show is dedicated to the health. But now it's dedicated to the soul and to the neshama, to the strength of the Jewish people, as personified in this little baby that held out and is no longer with us, did his service to this world.
Born on the last day of Hanukkah.
That's right. Born on the last day of Hanukkah, held out strong, and is a holy offering, a whole and holy offering.
Should be the last one.
Amen. Amen. All right, folks, you are listening to the Yishai Fleisher Show. I want to thank you so much for joining me. Also, check out our flag page. Okay, if you go to YishaiFleisher.com.
Yes, we have another flag that has been retired to a good home. It was wagging its little tail, so excited to go to its next location after having flown in one of the most important, strategic, and historic places in the land of Israel. And you should definitely check out the YishaiFleisher.com website, and there it's just one easy click away to the flag project. You too can adopt a flag which has truly flown over one of these most important places, showing the entire world that the Jewish people are back and sovereign in these very important places.
That's right. And I also want to thank the folks at Hebron Fund. We bring you to Hebron, to the fathers and the mothers. We keep the place open as against the wishes of the haters. If you want to visit the tombs of the fathers and the mothers, connect with them. The word Hebron means connectivity. You could do it, and please just go to hebronfund.org. And I have the great privilege and honor to be associated with the Jewish community of Hebron, where I'm the spokesman, and also the Hebron Fund, which really helps create the envelope for a better life for Jewish people in the land of Israel, and especially in Hebron. So check that out. I want to thank you folks for being with me. I want to thank you for all the emails that you've sent, so please send some more. Yishai@thelandofisrael.com. I want to thank the Land of Israel Network, which is an incredible and beautiful, wondrous network that's sending out incredible knowledge and spiritual messages to the world, and we're trying very much to be just a shadow of the great messages that God is sending to the world through His Torah and through His revelation of bringing the Jewish people back to the Land of Israel, which is the greatest revelation of them all, because that's His great promise. And I want to thank you, Malka Fleischer, for coming on the show today.
Thank you, Yishai.
Bismachot.
It's been a pleasure.
Bismachot.
Yes,
we should see each other.
We should only have good news to report from here on, and continued health, and may God support and uplift Shira Yael Bat Liora Sara, who surely needs a lot of prayers still, maybe now more than before. And God should be with her and grant her lots of happy occasions from here on.
All right, folks, you are listening to the Yishai Fleischer Show, and I want you to be strong out there. I want you to say one simple thing, which is Am Yisrael Chai. That's right, Am Yisrael Chai. Say it right now. Say it with me. Am Yisrael Chai. Am Yisrael Chai. Nothing is going to stop us. Nothing is going to get in our way. The only things that they do is slow it down a little bit, but Geula is coming. Mashiach is coming. Redemption is coming. Elijah is coming. He's got a big message, all right, and God is fulfilling His dream, just to bring the Jewish people back to this world, to make the world a better place, an incredible place. And spiritual knowledge is being routed into the world, is being channeled into the world, and you're tuned into it. And you're tuned into the Yishai Fleischer Show here on the Land of Israel Network. When you're tuned into Torah, when to Israel, you're part of Israel. Wherever you are, stay tuned, stay strong, stay connected. God loves you, I love you. Be in touch, and Shabbat Shalom. Shabbat Shalom, Malka.
Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom, everybody, and come back next week. Shalom.
To make war upon rebellion is messy and slow, says T.E. Lawrence, like eating soup with a knife. Now I admit, I find life messy, but I never seem to feel that it's slow. I'm Rav Mike Foyer, and this is The Jewish Story.
Join Rav Mike Foyer for the best Jewish history podcast, The Jewish Story, on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com.